imagine a microscopic assassin. And no, I'm not talking about, you know, a biological virus or some piece of rogue code. This isn't some sci-fi nanobot that's going to take over the world. I'm talking about a simple, silent, metallic filament. A single crystalline needle, thinner than human hair. We're talking 50 microns here. It's completely invisible to the naked eye. You would never, ever know it was there. Not until the moment it brings down a $1 billion aerospace fleet. Or triggers a massive brand-destroying automotive recall. Or, God forbid, shuts down a life-critical medical device while a patient is on the table. It sounds like hyperbole, doesn't it? It really sounds like the plot of some techno thriller. But in the high-stakes world of manufacturing, and I mean, whether we're talking about the intricate sensors in an autonomous vehicle or the guidance controls in a satellite, this is a daily, terrified reality. And here's the paradox that really keeps engineers up at night. The industry spent years, decades even, moving to lead-free electronics to be safer, right? To meet environmental regulations. But in doing so, we essentially reawakened a dormant enemy. We stripped away the one thing that was keeping this assassin at bay. And now, mission-critical sensors are vulnerable in a way they just haven't been for decades. So today, we're not just talking about surface finishing. We're not just talking about plating. We're talking about a thermal reset that eliminates liability. We're talking about how to stop a microscopic disaster before it even starts. Welcome to Reflections. I'm Oliver Watts.
And I'm Emma Rhodes.
It is fantastic to have you here. Hmm. You know, usually when people in the boardroom hear manufacturing specs or plating, their eyes glaze over a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
They think it's just the final step, you know, the shiny coat of paint at the end of the assembly line.
Which is, frankly, the most dangerous misconception you can have in this industry.
Really?
It's funny you say that because that glaze-over effect is exactly where the risk lives. I mean, If you treat surface finishing as a commodity, as just something you dip a part in to make it look silver, you are essentially building a skyscraper on a foundation of sand.
You're ignoring the physics.
You're ignoring the physics of the material. And when you ignore physics, well, physics tends to come back and bite you. Hard.
Exactly. And that's the vibe we want to shatter today.
Mm.
We're looking for those aha moments in the specs. We want to understand why the default choices, the things we've been writing on purchase orders for 10 years, might actually be sabotaging our products.
Right. And my role here is to bring the metallurgy into the boardroom. We need to look at reliability not as a box you check on a form, but as a physical property of the materials you're using.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, physics doesn't care about your warranty period.
Oh,
it doesn't. If the atoms aren't stable, the product fails. It doesn't matter if the marketing team said it would last 10 years.
Physics doesn't care about your warranty period. That is haunting. I love it, but it's haunting.
It's the truth. We try to negotiate with materials, but they're very, very stubborn negotiators.
So for everyone listening, and, you know, whether you're an engineer designing the next EV connector, a supply chain manager trying to figure out why your inventory is spoiling, or a QA pro losing sleep over field failures, this is for you. The mission of Reflections is simple. We want to help you streamline your processes, slash your costs, and hit those sustainability targets, specifically for mission-critical components. And today's focus is very specific. We're moving beyond that commodity mindset of surface finishing. We're going to see how a specific shift in technology can turn a liability into a strategic asset. And that shift is moving from standard matte tin to reflow plating. So let's get into it. First, we have to look at the hidden risks of the status quo. Chapter one, the silent failure mode. Because I feel like a lot of people think, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But what you're telling me is that it is broke, we just aren't seeing the cracks yet.
Oh, it is absolutely broken. And to understand why, we have to look at the landscape of modern electronics.
Okay.
We are living in a time of intense contradiction. Think about the devices we use. Everything is getting smaller.
Miniaturization,
exactly. The pitch, the distance between pins on a connector, is shrinking down to 0.5 millimeters or even less.
Right. Everything is just getting packed tighter and tighter. Mm. We want more processing power in smaller boxes. Our phones have to be thinner. Our car dashboards have to be sleeker.
Exactly. We are demanding density. And at the same time, the environments are getting more aggressive.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we're putting electronics directly into engine blocks, into transmission systems, into aerospace actuators where the temperature swings are just massive. So components are getting smaller, they're getting hotter, and the voltage density is going up.
Okay, so higher stakes, tighter spaces. That seems like a recipe for trouble, even without the material changes. You're reducing the margin for error effectively to zero.
Precisely. Now throw in the regulatory landscape. A few decades ago, we had a magic ingredient in our solder and our plating. Lead, symbol P.
The heavy metal we all learned to hate.
For health reasons, absolutely. It's toxic. It accumulates in the body.
Yeah.
Getting rid of it via RoHS and Roquish directives was the right thing to do for the planet and for human health. I want to be very clear on that.
Of course.
I'm not advocating we go back to poisoning the water supply. But purely from a metallurgical standpoint, lead was fantastic.
How so? I mean, I usually just think of lead as dead weight, something heavy and soft.
Well, in the crystal lattice of tin, lead acted as a stress reliever. It was like a soothing balm for the metal structure.
Okay.
When you mixed just a small percentage of lead with tin, it disrupted the crystal structure in a way that prevented internal stress from building up. It made the metal soft, pliable, and functionally stable over long periods. It prevented the atoms from getting agitated.
But then the regulations came in.
The regulations came in, we took the lead out.
Yeah.
And the industry scrambled for a replacement.
And the default replacement became what, just pure tin?
Specifically, standard matte tin, ASTM B545 Class A or B. If you look at the specs for thousands of parts right now, that is what is listed.
It's the good enough trap. It's cheap. It's available.
And it technically meets the lead-free requirement.
So it checks the box.
Precisely. Engineers specify it because it's the path of least resistance. It's what the previous engineer used and the one before that. It's the copy and paste spec.
But here's the problem. Without lead, pure tin is stressed.
Fundamentally stress.
Let's unpack that. When you say stressed, you don't mean it's anxious about a deadline. We're talking about mechanical stress at the atomic level.
Correct. I'm talking about compressive stress. Think about how matte tin is applied. It's electroplated.
Right.
You're using electricity to force ions out of a solution and onto a copper surface. They land as individual grains, piling up on top of each other. It isn't a solid sheet. It's more like a packed powder of crystals.
Like packing snow into a snowball.
A very, very tight snowball, yes. Or imagine a subway car at rush hour. You are shoving more and more people, or in this case, atoms, into a space that is already full.
And they don't want to be there.
They don't want to be there. Because of the chemistry and the mismatch with the copper underneath, the copper atoms and tin atoms are different sizes, those grains are actively pushing against each other. They are under immense pressure to expand, to move, but they have nowhere to go. That is compressive stress.
And nature hates stress. I mean, thermodynamics tells us that systems always want to find equilibrium.
They do.
They want to relax. They want to be at the lowest energy state possible.
Exactly. Nature always seeks the path of least resistance. And this brings us to the microscopic assassin you mentioned in the open, the tin whisker.
The name sounds deceptively cute. Tin whisker. It sounds like something on a kitten.
It does.
Or maybe a hipster beard style. But I have a feeling you're going to tell me it's not cute.
It is definitely not cute. It's a catastrophic failure mode. When those tin atoms are squeezed under that compressive stress, eventually they find a release valve.
Okay.
The lattice pops out a single crystal. It ejects it outward like a filament.
I've seen scanning electron microscope photos of these. They're bizarre. They look like weird organic hairs growing out of the metal. Sometimes they're straight, sometimes they're kinked. They look alien.
They do look organic, but they are 100% pure metal. And the mechanism is very similar to squeezing a balloon.
Uh-huh.
If you squeeze a balloon with both hands, the air has to go somewhere. It bulges out between your fingers.
Mm.
That is exactly what the tin lattice does. It ejects this whisker to relieve the internal pressure. The bulge is the whisker.
And the problem, obviously, is that tin is a metal.
Right. It's conductive, extremely conductive. So you have this conductive hair growing spontaneously. It can grow hundreds of microns long. I've even seen some data suggesting they can grow longer in certain conditions.
Wow.
Now, remember what I said about miniaturization?
The pins are only 0.5 millimeters apart.
Exactly. So if a whisker grows just a fraction of a millimeter, it can bridge the gap between two pins, and that creates a short circuit.
A hard short.
A hard short. And if that connector is controlling, say, the braking system in an autonomous car,
right,
then you have a massive safety failure. The car thinks the brakes are on when they aren't, or vice versa.
Or the satellite loses power to its guidance system. There was a famous case with a Galaxy satellite years ago that was attributed to tin whiskers.
And the terrifying thing about whiskers, I assume, is that they're unpredictable.
Completely unpredictable. They might grow in a month. They might grow in 5 years. They might grow when the part is just sitting on a shelf. You cannot test for them at the end of the line because they haven't grown yet.
That's the scary part. You can do all the QA in the world before the product leaves the factory, and it passes with flying colors.
100%.
But the defect grows after it's in the customer's hands.
Exactly. It's a latent defect, a ticking time bomb.
So relying on standard matte tin is basically playing Russian roulette with your reliability.
It really is.
You're just hoping the bullet, the whisker doesn't fire during the lifespan of the product. That is a very apt analogy. And the industry tries to mitigate it. Don't get me wrong. They use nickel underplates, or they try to anneal, that is, bake the parts after plating to try and relax the stress a little.
But those are just Band-Aids.
They're just Band-Aids. They don't remove the root cause. They just slow it down or reduce the probability.
Which isn't good enough.
In mission-critical applications, aerospace, medical, automotive safety, you don't want reduced probability. You want zero probability.
Okay, but whiskers aren't the only problem with matte tin, right? You mentioned the structures like pack powder.
Yes, that's the other side of the coin. Because it's just grains sitting next to each other, there are microscopic gaps. We call this porosity. It is not a solid shield.
So things can get through.
Things can get through. This leads to corrosion. Oxygen and humidity can seep through those pores and reach the copper underneath.
So the very thing you're plating to protect is getting attacked from the inside out.
Correct. You get copper oxides forming under the plating, or, you know, zinc migration if you're using a brass substrate. This degrades the electrical connection over time. The resistance goes up. The signal integrity goes down.
And I imagine that messes with soldering, too, because soldering relies on a perfectly pure surface.
Oh, it's a huge nightmare. We call it duetting.
Duetting.
Imagine you have a reel of connectors in your warehouse. They've been there for 6 months. You take them to the assembly line to solder them onto a board. But because the plating was porous, the copper has migrated up into the tin, or oxygen has migrated down. The surface is compromised. It's contaminated.
And the solder just won't stick.
It won't wet. It beads up like water on a waxed car. Now you have a cold solder joint, which is a massive reliability problem.
So you have to scrap the part.
You either scrap the part or you have to use these really aggressive acid fluxes to try and clean it, which introduces its own reliability risks because flux residue can cause corrosion later on. It's a cascading series of problems.
Wow. Okay, so let's just pause and recap this because this is the problem chapter of our deep dive.
Mm.
Number one. The industry standard, matte tin, is a gamble in a lead-free world. It was fine when we had lead to calm it down, but on its own, it's dangerous.
It's inherently unstable.
Number two, the danger comes from compressive stress. The atoms are squeezed, which drives them to eject these conductive whiskers that cause shorts.
The root cause.
And number three, the physical structure of matte tin is porous. It's like a sponge, allowing corrosion and ruining solderability over time.
That is a perfect summary. We are relying on a finish that is fundamentally flawed for high reliability applications. It's a ticking clock.
So that's the doom and gloom. That's the problem.
Yeah.
But the promise of this deep dive is that there's a way out. There's a reset. We don't have to just accept this risk.
Yes. And it isn't just a new chemical. It is a physics-based solution.
Let's move to chapter two, the thermal reset, the solution. We are talking about reflow plating. Now, when I hear reflow, I usually think of soldering, you know, reflow ovens on the PCB line where they melt the solder paste. But this is different. This is happening at the plating stage.
Right. It's a really important distinction to make. Reflow plating is a manufacturing process where we combine electroplating with fusion.
Plating plus fusion. Okay, walk us through the steps. How does this differ from the matte tin process we just critiqued?
Okay. So step one is the same. We electroplate a precise layer of pure tin onto the metal strip. We use the same chemistry, the same electricity. But then, and this is the critical part, we don't just wind it up and ship it. We send it immediately into a reflow chamber.
And this is where the magic happens.
This is where the physics takes over. We heat the strip to a temperature just above the melting point of tin. Tin melts at exactly 232 degrees Celsius. So we take it up past that liquid state.
So the tin actually melts. It becomes a liquid on the surface of the connector.
It becomes a liquid. For a brief moment, you have a layer of molten metal on the part.
Oh.
Then we rapidly quench it. We cool it down extremely fast with water or air knives.
Okay. It sounds simple. Melt it and cool it. It sounds almost too simple. But you're the metallurgist.
Yeah.
Tell me what is happening to those atoms during that phase change. Why is this a revolution?
It is a revolution because that phase change from solid to liquid and back to solid does three things that standard plating physically cannot do. It fundamentally alters the state of the material.
Okay, let's take them one by one. What's the first thing?
The first, and arguably the most important, is stress zeroing.
Zeroing, like taking it to absolute zero.
Taking the stress to zero. Remember the squeezed balloon?
Yeah. Atoms fighting for space in the subway car.
When you melt the tin, you are releasing your grip on the balloon. The crystal lattice completely dissolves. It turns into a liquid, which is amorphous. Liquids don't have crystal lattices. They don't have compressive stress.
All that stored energy.
All that stored compressive energy from the electroplating process, it's gone. Dissipated into heat. Vanished.
So the fuel for the whiskers is removed. It's like clearing out the subway car.
It's completely gone. And when the tin cools down and resolidifies, it forms a brand new crystal lattice in a state of perfect equilibrium. There is no internal pressure pushing atoms out.
So no stress.
No stress, no mechanism to drive whisker growth. You have effectively disarmed the assassin.
That is fascinating. So it isn't about blocking the whiskers with a shield. It's about removing the reason they exist in the first place.
Precisely. It is a root cause cure. We aren't fighting the symptom. We are changing the physics of the material.
Okay, stress zeroing is number one. That's a huge one. What's the second thing?
Surface densification. Remember the packed powder issue with matte tin? The porosity?
Right. The sponge. The gaps between the grains.
When the tin turns to liquid, what do liquids do? They flow. They follow gravity and surface tension. The molten tin flows into every microscopic crack, pore, and crevice on the surface.
It fills the gaps.
It fills the gaps perfectly. So when it solidifies, it is no longer a collection of individual grains. It is a solid, continuous, non-porous sheet.
So it's like, okay, imagine a cobblestone street. That's matte tin. Lots of cracks between the stones where weeds, or in our case, corrosion, can grow.
Good analogy.
Reflow is like paving over that whole street with fresh, smooth asphalt.
That is a great analogy. And because it's so smooth and solid, oxygen can't get through, humidity can't get through. You have created a hermetic shield over the copper.
And that leads to the shiny look, right? Reflow parts look like mirrors. I've seen them. They almost look like jewelry.
They do. They're mirror bright. Matte tin looks dull and gray. The brightness isn't just aesthetic, it's proof of the density and smoothness.
How so?
Light reflects off it perfectly because there are no microscopic bumps to scatter the light. So if it's shiny, it's dense. The appearance is a direct indicator of the superior physical property.
Okay, so we've got stress zeroing and densification. You mentioned a third thing. Something about the chemistry at the boundary.
Yes. The intermetallic formation, or the IMC. This is a bit technical, but stay with me because this is what saves your solderability and your shelf life.
I'm with you. Let's get technical.
Okay. So whenever you put tin on top of copper, they interact. They want to mix. They form a layer called copper tin intermetallic. Specifically, the chemical formula is Cu6SN5.
Catchy name. Rolls right off the tongue.
I know. But it's really important. In standard matte tin, this layer grows slowly and unevenly over time, just at room temperature. It consumes the tin and the copper. It can be jagged and irregular.
Not ideal.
Not ideal at all. But in reflow plating, because we hit it with that intense heat spike, we force the formation of this layer immediately and uniformly.
So we speed run the chemistry.
We do. We create a perfect, uniform, continuous IMC layer right at the interface between the copper and the tin.
Why do we want that? Usually I think of intermetallics as brittle or bad.
In this case, we want it because that layer acts as a cap, a security guard. It locks the copper down. It prevents the copper atoms from migrating up into the tin later on.
Ah, so it stops that de-wetting problem we talked about.
Exactly. It keeps the copper where it belongs and keeps the tin pure. This is why reflowed parts have such an incredible shelf life. The barrier is already built. You aren't waiting for it to form poorly over time. You engineered it to form perfectly on day one.
There's one more technical detail I want to touch on before we move to the business case. You mentioned grain structure in the notes. Small grains versus large grains. Why does size matter here?
In metallurgy, grain size matters a lot. Matte tin has very small grains, maybe 1 to 3 microns in size.
Tiny.
Very tiny. Reflowed tin, on the other hand, because it cooled from a liquid state, forms large grains, 5, 10, even 20 microns.
Okay. Why is bigger better? Usually in tech, smaller is better.
Not here. Think about it like a border. Impurities and corrosion tend to travel along the grain boundaries, the edges where the crystals meet.
Okay.
If you have millions of small grains, you have millions of boundaries. It's like a super highway for corrosion.
Lots of little roads for the bad stuff to travel on.
Right. But with reflow, you have these large grains. That means far fewer boundaries. It is much, much harder for impurities to move through the material. It's thermodynamically more stable. It's like having a border wall with very few gates versus a fence with holes every 5 feet.
It is amazing how much is happening in that split second of melting and cooling. You're changing the stress, the density, the chemistry, and the grain structure.
It really is. It's a total transformation of the material properties. It stops being just tin and starts being an engineered surface.
Okay, so let's hit the reset button again. Reset number two for everyone listening.
Yeah, let's do it.
We've learned that reflow plating isn't just heating it up. It's a fundamental phase change. Number one, it melts the tin to release 100% of the stored stress, killing whiskers at the source.
Gone. No more fuel.
Number two, it flows into the pores, creating a dense, solid shield against corrosion.
A hermetic seal.
And number three, it creates a chemically stable barrier, that IMC, that locks the copper down and protects the solderability for the long haul.
You're getting pretty good at this metallurgy stuff. You might need a lab coat soon.
Hey, I'm learning from the best.
Yeah.
But now, I want to pivot. Because engineering truth is one thing, but we also have to talk about the reality of the business, the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes the best engineering solution gets killed because it's perceived as too expensive or too complex. Let's move to chapter three, the business case. You've broken this down into three pillars: operational, financial, and strategic. Let's start with operational. And this brings us to a word I love but rarely get to use: tribology.
Tribology, the study of friction, wear, and lubrication. It's one of the most underappreciated sciences in manufacturing.
Why are we talking about friction in a deep dive about plating?
Because connectors have to be connected. Someone or some machine has to push the plug into the socket.
Right, the physical act of assembly.
And if you are building a car, you might have a connector with 64 pins, a big ECU header, the electronic control unit. That's the brain of the engine.
That is a lot of pins. That's a massive block to push together.
It is. Now, think about the physics. The force required to push that connector in the insertion force is determined by friction. The formula is simple. Force equals the coefficient of friction times the normal force. F insertion equals mo times F normal.
Okay, bring us back to English. What's mu?
Mu is the coefficient of friction. It's just a number that represents how sticky or draggy a surface is. And matte tin is rough. Remember the snowball analogy?
Yep.
It has a high coefficient of friction, around 0.4.
So it's draggy, like sandpaper on sandpaper.
Very draggy. So if you have 64 pins and each one is draggy, the total force required to push that plug in is massive.
I can just imagine an assembly line worker struggling to jam this thing in all day long.
And that leads to actual real-world problems, repetitive strain injuries, operator fatigue. But even worse, if they have to push too hard, they might slip. They might bend a pin.
And a bent pin is a dead part.
Yeah.
You have to scrap the whole board.
Correct. Or worse, the pin bends and makes intermittent contact, and the car fails later down the road. Now look at reflow tin. Because it is so smooth, remember the mirror finish? The coefficient of friction drops to about 0.2.
It's halved.
It is literally half.
Half the friction. That's a massive drop.
So the insertion force drops dramatically. This is what we call low insertion force, or LIF technology.
That is huge for the assembly line efficiency and ergonomics.
It is. But it's also huge for the design engineer. Because if the friction is lower, they can design the connector to have a higher normal force.
What's normal force?
That's the spring force pushing the pin against the contact pad. A higher normal force is better. It means a better electrical connection.
A tighter grip.
A tighter electrical grip. So you get better conductivity and reliability without making the plug impossible to insert. You win on both sides.
So you get a better connection, but it's easier to make.
Exactly. You get a tighter electrical grip, but an easier mechanical mating. That opens up design possibilities that simply don't exist with matte tin.
That is a brilliant operational win. Okay, let's talk about the financial pillar. Inventory and waste. You touched on this with the whole shelf life issue.
This is a silent killer of profit margins. I have visited warehouses where they have reels and reels of stamped parts that have been sitting there for 9 months. Maybe the market slowed down. Maybe they overordered.
Mm-hmm.
They pull them out, test them, and they fail the solderability test.
Because the matte tin oxidized or the copper migrated through those pores.
Right. So now you have two choices, neither of them good. You scrap the metal, which is throwing money directly in the trash, Or you send it out to be stripped and replated, which costs money and time.
And delays your production. If you're running a just-in-time system, you're dead in the water.
Absolutely. Reflow plating solves this. Because of that IMC barrier and the dense, non-porous surface, reflowed parts remain solderable for years.
Years, not months.
Years. I have seen data showing perfect wetting after extended storage that would have completely destroyed a matte tin part.
So, as a supply chain manager, this changes my entire buying strategy.
Completely. You can buy in bulk when copper prices are low. You can hold safety stock without worrying it will expire like a carton of milk.
That has a direct impact on cash flow and working capital. Plus, you must get a higher first-pass yield on the soldering line.
Yes, a much higher FPY. If the solder wets instantly, you don't have rework. You don't have touch-up. The line just runs. All those hidden costs of bad plating just disappear. And believe me, those costs, rework, scrap, downtime, are often much, much higher than the plating cost itself.
Okay, let's hit the third pillar, the strategic pillar. This is about brand authority.
This is about who you want to be as a manufacturer. We are seeing a huge shift in the market. The big players, the Teslas, the Boeings, the medical device giants, they are demanding zero defects.
Standard isn't good enough anymore. Meeting the spec is the bare minimum.
It's not even a starting point in some cases.
Yeah.
If you are supplying a component for an autonomous driving system, you cannot tell the OEM, well, we use standard matte tin, so there's a small statistical chance of a whisker short.
They will laugh you out of the room.
They will laugh you out of the room. Or worse, they will sue you when it fails. Liability is a massive driver here.
So moving to reflow is a signal. It's more than just a technical choice.
It signals that you understand metallurgy. It signals that you are engineering your surface finish, not just buying it by the pound. It turns a commodity step into a competitive asset. It says, we care about the microscopic details that guarantee reliability.
It sets you apart from the guy down the street who's just dipping parts in a bath and hoping for the best.
Exactly. And this aligns with what Precious Plate talks about, this idea of the art and science philosophy.
I noticed that in the notes. Can you explain that? Art and science. Because usually we try to remove the art from manufacturing. We want pure, reproducible science.
We do, but nature is variable. The science is what we've been discussing. The JDEC standards, the ASTM specs, the rigorous data. You have to follow the rules of physics.
Right. That's the foundation.
But the art, that's the craftsmanship. Every part is different. The shape of the connector, the thickness of the material, the type of stamping. If you have a thick part right next to a thin part on the same strip, they heat up at different rates.
So you can't just set the oven to 250 and walk away.
No, absolutely not. Designing a process flow that melts the tin just right, getting the temperature profile perfect so it flows but doesn't drip, quenching it at the exact right millisecond to freeze that grain structure, that is an art form. It requires deep experience.
It's like a chef perfecting a recipe.
Yeah.
You have the chemistry of the ingredients, but you need the skill of the cook to handle the heat and timing.
That's it, exactly. And that's what a company like Precious Plate really emphasizes. They don't just run a line. They craft a process for the specific component. That is how you get true reliability. You can't just cookie cutter it. You have to tune the process to the part.
So let's bring this all home. We've covered a lot of ground here. We've gone from the microscopic danger of whiskers to the thermodynamics of phase changes, and finally to the bottom line of the business. What's the big takeaway for you, thinking about the future of this industry?
For me, it comes down to choice. Sticking with standard matte tin is a choice. It is an active decision to accept risk. You are accepting the risk of whiskers, the risk of corrosion, and the risk of production delays. You are betting that the failure won't happen to you.
And reflow plating.
Reflow is the decision to eliminate that risk. It's the only logical path for high reliability applications. If you are building something that absolutely needs to work, where failure has real consequences, you simply cannot afford to use a porous, stressed plating.
It's an insurance policy that pays for itself in efficiency and reliability.
Well put, it's an investment in sleep. You sleep better at night knowing your physics is sound.
Okay, so for the listener who is nodding along right now, realizing that maybe their specs are outdated or maybe they're just tired of fighting solder issues, what do they do? We aren't just going to leave you hanging with a theory. Here is the strict call to action. Step one, you need to get informed. There's a lot more technical depth than we could cover in an hour. Join the email list for technical updates. Get the data sheets. Understand the math we talked about. Step two, visit the website, preciousplate.com. That is preciousplate.com. Look at the resources there. Look at the comparisons. But step three is the most critical. If you have a complex interconnect challenge, if you're designing a new part, or if you're seeing failures in an old one, Do not just send an email.
Pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone. Call a surface finishing engineer directly. The number is 716-283-0690.
That is 716-283-0690. You need to talk to a human who understands the art side of this, not just the spec sheet. You need someone who can look at your geometry and tell you exactly how to plate it for maximum reliability.
Exactly. Don't let a 50-micron whisker be the reason your brand takes a hit. This has been an absolute education. I will never look at a connector or a USB plug or my car's electronics the same way again.
That's the goal. The devil is in the details, but so is the solution.
Keep reflecting on your process, everyone, and we'll see you in the next deep dive.
Bye, everyone.
See you.